This is Upstate's HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen here with you. Warren Harding, the 29th president of the United States, died in office in 1923 at the age of 57 of what were called natural causes. While he was one of the least popular presidents in our history, perhaps one of his most fatal flaws may have been his choice of physicians. We'll hear with more on this as Dr. Harold Smullyan, emeritus professor of medicine, specializing in cardiology at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Smullyan. Thanks for coming in. So you just wrote a paper drawn from historical sources describing the symptoms and the circumstances that may have led to Warren Harding's early demise. Tell us about it.
Well, Warren Harding was elected following the First World War, promising the country a period of normalcy. So he, in fact, did very little as a president and was, in some quarters, thought to be our worst president. But he had some severe heart problems late in his status as president. And I think much of it was unrecognized at the time. And I think had it been his medical care could have been improved.
What were the symptoms that he was, as you were doing your research, what led you to believe that he had heart problems?
Well, in retrospect, he had complained of chest pain, of shortness of breath, and his valet had stated that he had symptoms that are very typical of the shortness of breath of patients in congestive heart failure, that symptom being called orthopnea. So his valet gave a very good description of this symptom for him.
And what was that symptom?
Well, it's shortness of breath that's aggravated by lying down. So he had to sleep sitting up, and this was noticed by his valet and reported on.
So you were really kind of digging around into all of these kind of assorted sources and trying to kind of glean together or garner together facts that would lead you to that diagnosis, so to speak.
That's correct.
So what actually caused his death, do you think?
Well, it's a bit speculative, but just before he died, perhaps an hour or so before, he had a period of perhaps unconsciousness that lasted only for seconds. And then he claimed to feel better again. And then shortly after that, he had a sudden death. The idea that he died relatively suddenly suggested that it was a cardiac death rather than a death from a stroke, which was what it was called at the time. So I think the evidence is fairly good that this was a death from probably a cardiac arrhythmia, an abnormal rhythm of the heart.
And somewhere in your writings, I noticed that there was some speculation that he had a rapid heartbeat, like atrial fibrillation, which was also, was that chronic for him, do you think, or had just recently occurred prior to his death?
It's unclear when it actually began. But while he was on this voyage of understanding that he took to Alaska, which lasted quite a long time.
So this was a long trip he took to go to Alaska and then ended up in San Francisco where he died.
That's right. He was coming back to Washington on his after visiting Alaska. And it was somewhere during that time where it was noticed that his heart rate was very fast.
So what, you allude to this throughout your paper, how do you think his choice of an official presidential physician may have played a role in this?
Well, who he chose is explicable. His parents were both homeopathic physicians, and he chose a homeopathic physician while he was still working in Ohio, where he came from.
And he was an editor of a paper before he ran for president, right?
He actually owned the paper. Mm-hmm. And he this physician was very helpful to his wife, Florence, and she was very reluctant to move to Washington when he became president without the services of Dr. Sawyer, her physician.
Can you define for the general public when we say a homeopathic physician? How is that? What's the distinction there?
Well, homeopathy hasn't been taught in the United States for a long time. It was based on the use of extremely small doses of medications to correct abnormalities in the patients, and these small doses are no longer believed to be effective.
So it was a recognized means of education for a physician, but it was a particular field?
It was recognized for a time, but by the time he became sick in 1923, it was clearly on the decline, there being only two other homeopathic medical schools left in the United States.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with cardiologist Dr. Harold Smullyan. We're talking about the untimely death of the 29th president of the United States, Warren G. Harding, and a paper that Dr. Smullyan has written trying to elucidate and investigate what the causes were that led to his untimely death. So you mentioned his wife, Florence, and she was very tied to this physician and apparently had also some medical kidney problems of which he was helpful with, this homeopathic physician. But she was very influential in his life. It sounds like even maybe a little bit too much so, or a little bit too bossy, for want of a better term.
She promised when he was a senator to make him president of the United States. And one gets the sense from reading the material about her that she was an overbearing person and that he was quite willing to accept her advice, feeling inadequate to the job.
To the job of being president.
Exactly.
I think throughout, there were a lot of indications of that throughout, that he really, how did I get here? What am I doing here as president? But nevertheless, he did accept her advice with regard to this position. Do you feel that, obviously, that choice may have rendered him more vulnerable to his problems? Was it that his physician was unable to or unwilling to recognize some of these symptoms?
I doubt if he was unwilling, but I think he was unable, not well enough trained, familiar with the modern changes that had gone on in medicine during the preceding few years. So I think he was unable to really understand what was going on with the president and attributed his illness to food poisoning, which was clearly not the case.
The final illness,
specific final illness.
Yes. So what was the state of diagnostics back then? I mean, do you think, well, first, what was the state of diagnostics in terms of cardiac difficulties? But then do you think if he had been diagnosed correctly, that anything could have changed?
Well, I'll answer your second question first.
Sure.
Most of the errors that were made or the deficiencies that were apparent in his medical care were those in diagnosis. Had the correct diagnosis been made, there might have been some changes in his therapy that would have prolonged his life. But I think the major errors were diagnostic rather than therapeutic, because there wasn't really much available.
But you did mention earlier that there were changes in medicine back then. What were the changes that might have played a role?
Well, for example, electrocardiography was widely used at that time. It seemed clear from reviewing what was available that his physicians didn't understand how to use that. It was recommended that he have one when he was near death, but his wife wouldn't permit him to be moved to the hospital since the electrocardiogram machine wasn't transportable.
So they didn't have portable EKG machines, which currently now obviously is the state of the art.
There were some, but apparently there weren't any at Stanford where his consultants were in practice.
So basically, it sounds like if he had had better medical care all along, do you think that the circumstances, the outcome might have changed?
I think his life could have been prolonged. I think the final outcome would have eventually been the same.
Mm-hmm. But he was quite young, or I guess for that era, was 57 considered quite young?
I consider it quite young.
We all do today, but I'm wondering back then.
I think that probably he could have expected to live somewhat longer had they been able to treat him better.
So was he also overweight? Did he suffer from some degree of obesity as well?
Yes, he was obese, and even more important, he had high blood pressure and had it for many years. There was really no effective therapy of high blood pressure at that time, but his heart failure could have been better treated with some medications that were available.
Like diuretics of that
age? Diuretics really didn't come into popular use until after he was dead. But digitalis was available, and he did get a dose or two of digitalis just before he died. I think more use of that, more rest, keeping him less active than he had been forced to be would have been useful.
And as you mentioned, he was on this voyage to Alaska, which from my reading was his wife's idea, because she had always wanted to see Alaska, and they created this so-called voyage of understanding, which apparently was quite strenuous, and this was just prior to his death.
That's correct. Alaska at that time was not a state, it was still a territory, and he was the first president to visit it. So I think it had some symbolic importance, and he did make numerous stops along the seacoast where his ship took them and made many, many speeches on the way there and on the way home.
Is it possible, I mean, when do you surmise that that degree of exertion could have also played a role?
I think so.
And also, it's funny. So what finally killed him in your mind? What finally killed him?
I think
a heart, myocardial.
An arrhythmia of the heart.
Okay.
And I think he probably had coronary heart disease, which is very common in people with high blood pressure and obesity.
Following his death, I don't want to run out of time. We only have a little bit of time left. But there were all these scandals that came out, both in terms of his own administration, but also his personal life. Do you think that those could have been playing a role or weighing heavily on him in terms of stress as well?
Well, I'm sure that stress plays an important role in everybody who becomes ill, whether it's from mental illness or otherwise. And he had a lot of stress from the revelations that he had been unfaithful to his wife and that the major scandals of his administration, particularly the Teapot Dome scandal, weighed heavily on his mind.
So why do you do this kind of work in the little bit of time we have left? What draws you to do this kind of detective work, medical detective work?
I retired from active patient care about a year ago, but I still enjoy coming to the office every day, and this gives me an opportunity to do some productive work, not involving the care of patients, but that is fun for me and I hope will entertaining for people who read it.
Absolutely, and you're shedding light on the history of medical science and its advancements in doing so. So I want to thank you so much for coming in and joining me. My guest has been Dr. Harold Smullyan. He's emeritus professor of medicine specializing in cardiology at Upstate Medical University. I'm Linda Cohen. You're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.